has a special message for us that he's going to come and share. Things that have been on his heart, things that he's been doing over in India, and things he's probably going to surprise us with, I'm sure. So please come on up, Brian, and bring the message for us today.
First, I'd like everybody, if you're able, to open your Bibles to Hebrews chapter 10, verse 25. And we're just going to just leave it there. We're not going to read it yet. We're just going to leave it there and just have it ready. But first, I'd like to thank everybody for the help and support that you guys gave Tana and I, and the prayers and the financial support for what we had going on this time in India with Vava. And I mean, truly, just from this church body alone was the overwhelming amount of that. And I just want to thank everybody for that and praise God as well. Since I came back, I came back about 2.5-3 weeks ago. I haven't had a chance to talk to everybody about what happened. And I actually just wrote it out because, I mean, I have a really good memory, but I get a little bit of anxiety when I talk, so I just wrote it out so I can read. I know that's a little more boring, but we're just going to have to do it that way. And so many of you eager to hear about what happened involving the trip to India last month we took, and rightfully so, you should hear it. And being on one side of an adventure, wondering, imagining what could possibly be going on, can bring forth some truly fantastic and awesome storylines. And I want to tell you just how things went and what happened and what I learned. There's some people here that may not be aware, so I'm just going to go ahead and just kind of give you an idea of what was going on. For those of you who are unaware of who Vava is or are unsure of some of the details, I'll give you a quick glimpse into our past with this young girl and who she was and ultimately what happened to her the days before I arrived to see her in the hospital. Vava was a young girl we met in the capital of India about 9 years ago. She was a preteen at the time, living in an orphanage, and without taking too much time, I'll tell you that she was not an orphan, and we helped her escape the orphanage that kept her in bondage so that she could flee back to her homeland in the far northeast, which is Manipur, India. That in of itself is a few words briefly describing a truly epic adventure that Tana and I had with this young girl that was full of uncertainty and relying on God's grace from start to finish. After Vava was back home safe, she went on to the top of her class across the region on her way to the top university of her state with her goal to be a botanist to study plants and its medicinal properties. But trouble reached this young girl over a year ago when she started having trouble with her stomach. And that is all we knew it was, as she was very private about such things and she didn't want to talk about it, and she thought she was going to get better, and we just kind of figured she was just a young adult thinking that, you know, she was invincible. And time and time again, we would try to offer her help or what she should do, and sometimes she would say she was better, sometimes worse. But needless to say, things did get worse. And over time, she went back and forth between her local village doctor, and when I say a local village, I quite literally mean like mud huts and thatch. I mean, this is kind of a primitive area. Whenever she wasn't in school, this is where she lived. And between seeing this doctor, she also saw a village witch doctor, or a shaman who dealt in practicing rituals to remove evil spirits such as vampires from one's body that causes afflictions. And this is kind of the belief that existed in this part of India before missionaries came about 104 years ago. And because they have this belief, you know, and it's very ingrained in who they are, I mean, a lot of them are Christians, but they still kind of believe these beliefs. And because they do kind of hang on to that, you know, whenever a doctor can't help them, they quickly go to possibly a witch doctor to try to help them. Now, because their local doctor was unable to diagnose, instead of consulting with their church or a pastor or even a doctor for a second opinion in a larger village or perhaps a large town, they decided to try their chance with a village shaman. And in return for money, this shaman will perform rituals to remove demons, vampires, or evil spirits from her body. And many times after dealing with such practices of paganism, the patients are given herbal sedatives or painkillers that, along with the belief that the spirits from within have been removed, a form of placebo effect induces, and along with her young age, some of her symptoms would come and go. And for almost an entire year, this was the practice that was done every few months when she got worse. Well, the illness she had took its toll, and about 3 months ago, we'd heard that she was bedridden, on an IV because she could no longer eat and was too weak to even go outside to use the bathroom. And yeah, they go outside to use the bathroom, just to let you know. It was at this time we were struck with shock and awe. And this is, we kind of told the church what was going on and kind of our decision that I might have to go back early to kind of facilitate helping her, because at the time she was stuck in her home and she didn't know what to do and they didn't have any money and her parents weren't doing the right things to help her, for, let's just say that. And so originally we just heard it was minor stomach problems, and it was our goal at the time that when I was going to go back, I was going to take her to a specialist, but now she was bedridden and we had to get to her right away. And if you flash forward a couple weeks, I'm in Manipur and I'm at her bedside, and that's when we started kind of a funding campaign to pay for all her medical bills to try to save Vava, as it was titled. And as I sit there hanging on, as she's saying, hanging on to dear life, you know, I realize that she shouldn't be in this position. And then 2 weeks later, she passed away in her sleep. Now, a couple days before she passed away, I was called to be in another part of India to check in and take care of our kids that we're taking care of on another part of India. And I had to be there to take care of some important passport appointments for our daughter, Melody, and the other boys that are there. And it was hard to leave Vava during this time, because the day I left, it was uncertain if she was to pull through and survive. And it was while I was gone those few days that I heard about the death of Vava. And it was tough being away, because I was just there. And I was going to go back, but I had to just be gone for a few days. And it was heartbreaking, partly because of the friendship Tana and I had with her, and also because of the way she died and a reason for her being so sick. It was at this moment that I knew that God wanted me to do something. And I felt the need to go back and try to talk to her family and confront what was going on. Now, as I mentioned before, I was away at her time of death, and I immediately planned to go back to her region and her family to talk to her family and her friends, and also to confront, if I could, the village shaman that had falsely told her family that she had demons inside her, demons that were eating her insides, when in fact she had a quite common illness called gastrointestinal perforation, or pretty much just holes in your stomach. Something that, when detected by a doctor, can be cured through a quick surgery, medicine, and a few days of recovery. And given her age, which was about 22, she would have bounced back quite quick and been back on track to finishing college. But this was all taken away when Vava's family, a Christian family, got tricked into the dealings of a local village shaman who I heard made quite a lot of money in her treatments. This family trusted a non-Christian, a shaman, and they seemingly had nobody to help them in this decision. They were, what they figured, all alone in this decision. Now, Tana had told everyone here and also our family that I was to confront shamanism in this region and the shaman that was performing rituals near where she lived. And I am sure many of you are eager to hear how that went. I was quite nervous at this prospect of coming face to face with someone who dealt with such evils in a village that some of them staunchly supported these old traditions. And I was right to be nervous. So many of you wanted to hear this story, and so here's the story that some of you have been waiting for. Many in our lives deal with dangers and evil in our lives from time to time, but I was going to be facing something in Manipur that was nothing short of something epic. There I was, after a few days of travel and preparation, faced in front of me a thatch hut that was the lair of the village shaman who dealt in dark arts and demons. There had been many rumors and stories told to the village that a foreigner was to come and confront this shaman. And many in the village were held up inside their huts, too afraid to be outside, knowing what might possibly happen when a Christian foreigner, a missionary type, was to come face to face with the most feared and infamous shaman in the area. A local pastor of a church He gave me this staff, which I hold right here, blessed by their congregation to aid me in what I would have to face. I thanked them for this staff, and although I was new to the concept of spiritual warfare, I was glad to wield such a weapon of power. The pastor's wife had given me a shawl to wear that had been woven by the women of the church, heavily prayed over, and it was believed it would provide me at least a +4 defense against such evil that would be shouted from forth through the mouth of the shaman and any of his followers that resided near his thatch hut. The stage was set. It was about 10 a.m., but it seemed to be dusk as the clouds were heavy and the wind was increasing. Storm crows were flying overhead. Wind was rustling. Leaves were rustling everywhere, and there was nobody to be found except for me and the shaman who was inside this hut. Would this be my last day on earth, I thought? I thought of my family and my friends here at church as I approached the hut. Would I see my wife and kids again? What was I doing? I can't do this. Or could I? Suddenly, I heard a deep moan that struck my inner soul, a gut-wrenching sound. The sound was inhuman in my mind, and I felt weak in the knees. It was coming from inside that thatch hut. Could it be the shaman? I prayed, Lord, give me strength to face this evil, and suddenly my knees were strengthened, and I felt at least a foot taller, and my muscles thicker. After receiving such a blessing of protection from above, I knew I had a chance to face any evil that was about to come forth. The sound from the hut grew louder, and suddenly a shaman appeared. He looked old, but moved like a young man. Wearing the skins of beasts, and with the scars and runes inscribed in his skin, he walked towards me. He too had a staff, soaked in blood. His eyes gleamed at me, and because of the darkness in the skies, they appeared to be a hint of red. He lifted his hand and spoke a deep tone and pointed his staff towards me with words of dark hate, and instantly I felt affected. The sound of his voice not only was painful to hear, it was also was painful to be feeling in my bones as it sunk straight in. I covered my face with the shawl that I had been given by the women of the church, and it started to shake, and the sides of it started to singe with the heat of hate and dread of despair. I felt the staff in my hand that I had been prayed and blessed by the church in that area, and raised it toward the shaman and said, "By the power of God, I render you powerless." Instantly, he stumbled back, but not before two of his minions, only about 4 feet tall, came from behind the hut and started charging towards me. They had knives, soaked in green poison. Instantly, I quickly twirled the staff, which I will not do right now because there's children present, and I kneeled and parried all the attacks that were thrusted at me by the hands of the evil shaman followers. And with a quick wave of the staff, they were thrown back by the power of God. And there they lay, lifeless. Then it was just the shaman and I, face to face, once again. Clearly, he knew I wasn't some feeble-minded villager. He knew he was up against the power of God this time. He started speaking a dark speech once again, and then he took a blade from his side satchel and cast an evil incantation on it, and then elevated a few feet in the air and charged at me. The shaman was actually flying towards me with a glowing blade and a bloodied staff, and instantly I prayed for God to stop this demon from heading my way. Suddenly, I felt my muscles bulge with strength and vigor. I charged toward and lifted the shawl that had been given me, woven from a dozen or so shawls, bound together with the prayers of the wives of the congregation. The shawl absorbed the blade's blow. The poison ate away at the shawl's first few layers. I then countered with a swift attack with the staff that shattered the shaman's very own staff. Another blow to the shaman's chest, and instantly the shaman was struck down. Instantly, everything around me that was once dark and restless calmed, and light appeared in the cloud through the clouds once again, and the villagers cheered, and the shaman was vanquished. No longer would he have influence on this village again. A great feast was made in honor of the great deed that had been done that day, and they named their village after me, and there was much rejoicing. Now, in case some of you hadn't guessed, which I'd hope you may have guessed, the story was fiction. Although exciting, that is not what happened. It was good. And I have the rights to that story back here if anyone needs to verify. So, like I said, although it's exciting, It's not what exactly happened at all, really. Although, it would have been kind of neat if it did. It wasn't even close. You see, that is how many of us, especially me, want to see things. Unless we hear something similar, we don't feel as if God's work was actually done. The real story didn't involve bloody staves or flying shamans, poison blades wielded by tiny servants of evil. It was much more simple, but in many ways might have had the same effect. There was a shaman, and although I wanted to confront the shaman himself, I knew that that most likely was not going to happen, and that it might even prove pointless, as he most likely would not even speak any English. And even if he did, what I had to say to him would be worthless, because I'd be casting my pearls among swine. And when I did arrive there, he actually was nowhere to be found. I'm actually quite sure he knew I was coming, but because I told everybody I wanted to confront him, and so maybe he just didn't want to show up. But I did have a chance to meet with the people who lived in her village that she lived, some of whom had never even seen a white person before. There was actually a woman who didn't sleep all night because she was going to see her first white person. And what was very, very interesting is she just wanted to see what I looked like and then just walked away. So I must not have been that impressive to her. But anyways, the message God wanted me to give for you today is about two villages. A tale of two villages, if you will. The first village was the home of Vava. Yes, a predominantly Christian village. They still, however, had other people and other influences in their midst, including people who held on to their old beliefs of paganism and Druidism and spirits that inhabit all parts of life and the good and evil they are able to cause in the lives of everyone. In this village, they were easily swayed by darkness and evil and did not have the trust in God they should have in all aspects of their life. Here in this village, when the going got tough, they seeked out answers outside of their faith and to solve their problems outside of their church, including handing over the weakened life of a young girl. Vava's family moved to this village a few years ago to find better work opportunities. Her family was a Christian family who had before had lived in a very tight-knit and close fellowship of believers. Here in this new village, the church body that was present was not as close as her old home. And although the local church prohibited such beliefs and practices of paganism that were present in this village, the style of fellowship in this village was quite infrequent, and therefore many families were left to their own devices when it came to times of trouble. They pretty much just met only on Sundays. That's all they did. It was in this village this family believed that if things can't be done the godly way, then other opportunities, old beliefs, ungodly ways are possible, because they also fellowshipped with lukewarm believers and also believers of totally different faiths. This ultimately led to the death of Vava, in my opinion. While I was in Manipur, I visited this village of hers, and I visited with the household leaders of many in this village and the people of her church. After long discussions and numerous, numerous translations, they agreed things needed to change in their village. They believe that there's too much influence in the areas of the old beliefs from over 100 years ago, and that is interrupting the message of Christ. But even though many of them fear the shaman, they agreed that the message, the verse I gave them, Deuteronomy 18:10, that there shall not be young among you anyone who makes his son or daughter pass through fire, one who uses divination, practices witchcraft, or one who interprets omens or a sorcerer. They agreed that it was this scripture they should follow and preach on the coming weeks. And for them to decide upon this was actually quite huge, given how the old way of thinking was deeply embedded in that area. Many hold on to the teachings of Christ and the old pagan beliefs and keep them both hand in hand. It was time to keep both hands on the cross and not stray from the narrow path. And ultimately, their church body needed to be united more. Many were unaware of what was even going on with Vava and her family, as they didn't fellowship much outside of Sunday church. Now, there was another village I visited, the village where many of Vava's family lived and have lived for generations. The village is very close-knit. All of them attend the local church, and every single home is just an extension of the other. I must have walked and sat in half a dozen homes with each people in the home familiar with each other as family, and we just walked in and sat down as if the house was our own, and nobody seemed to care because everybody's door was open. They all knew of Vava's death, which was quite as opposite of what Velva's own village knew of. And it was in this village where she was actually going to be buried. This was her home village, and many knew Velva and remembered her. Some were still grieving at the tragic loss. When the discussions of how she died and the many months of being treated by a local village shaman came up, many were outraged at the idea of such a presence being in a village of Christians. I said, "What can we do in this village to keep such a tragedy from happening here?" And I asked them, "Do they believe in such demons? And that in such demons could inhabit a young girl?" And they said, "Although we do believe in such demons, and that they can inhabit us, because we know there are demons in the world, they knew that they were not bound by such things. I was told of a time where some people who practice such beliefs of manipulating demons and curses moved to their village. They started to influence those in their village, and when the village Christians had enough, they banded together and drove them out." I said, "How?" They said they quite literally all showed up together, the entire church, and forced them to leave. All these people did leave and never returned. As a result, they have been free from such influences, and they say it could not have been done without everyone being in agreement to keep it that way. Now again, I mentioned this village is very close. All are family to each other. All are believers. This village meets at church 4 times a week. Christmas, Easter, and other holidays are week-long events that are celebrations with families mingled with families for hours and hours and hours at a time. Everyone knows everyone, and everyone is there to help each other. They are one entire large family, and they do not forsake assembly at all. There are hundreds in this village, possibly even over 1,000. And if a problem arises in the village, it is the village's problem, not an individual problem. If the church is not a building, but a body of believers, then they follow Hebrews 10:25 to the fullest. And if I could go to the first slide after this. Wait a minute, that's the wrong one. That's what happened earlier. Hebrews 10:25. And it says, "Not forsaking the assembly of ourselves together, as in the manner of some," and I put "as the manner of some" because this was the other village, "but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching." And I'd like to believe, you know, that our church, I think we do a pretty good job of assembling on Sunday, and once here every other Friday, and every 3 weeks for fellowship. I feel like we're lacking every other time. I mean, there's what, like 165 or 168 hours in a week, and we spend about 2 hours together. That's not even 1% of the time. And I feel like we could do more. And it's not Pastor Al. It's not, we don't look to him to tell us to do that. We're a body of believers. We're not a believers who follow Pastor Al's teachings. You know, it's up to us individually. We don't have to sit there and say, "Oh, what's in the bulletin this week? What are we doing? What's scheduled?" You know, all the bulletin is just talking about what is coming up. We're not bound by that. You know, and now I know some people meet, you know, every once in a while, and Tana and I try to as much as we can, but I feel like as a church we're lacking that. And if anyone disagrees with me, I'd like for them to raise their hand right now. I didn't think anybody would, but there probably is somebody that does. They just don't want to raise their hand. Let's go to the next slide. Not just Sunday. Okay, Hebrews 3:13, "But exhort one another daily while it is called today, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin." Because as we know, sin only comes on Sunday, right? Only on Sunday. Only a Sunday are we afflicted with sin. No, it happens every day, every hour of every day. And although we do have our families at our home to build off of, we also have each other. And I believe that if we were around each other more, that we would be able to lift each other up, and we'd be able to edify each other and exhort one another through times of trouble, that we can handle it not just alone, like Vava's family did, thinking that they could go to outside their church, outside their belief, that we could have one another. Let's go to the next slide. Be there for each other. Galatians 6, 1 through 2. Brethren, if a man is overtaken in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, considering yourself, lest you also be tempted. Bear one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. Now, over the past even couple years that Tana and I have been attending here, people have come and people have gone. And although today we have what seemingly looks like a full house, there's a lot of families missing. And there's a couple that are on vacation, you know, and people take trips, and that's fine, you know, that's great to do. But I also know that there are some that just don't attend here anymore, or they're dealing with problems outside of church that they don't want to, for whatever reason, come. And I'm not blaming them for any reason. I don't think it's just their fault for those thoughts or those beliefs or those feelings. I think the burden falls on us. I feel like too many times somebody has left our church and we're just like, oh, they're not here today. Oh, they haven't been here a while. I wonder what happened to them. And I would want to know why we don't, I know there's some that do, why we aren't all, you know, beckoning them to come back or finding out what the problem was. Because if they are truly our church family, if one day I showed up to church and Una was not here, I'd be upset. I'd fire, where's Una? Where's Una? Something's wrong. Where's Una? And that's kind of how I feel whenever someone's not here. Now, I know I'm not here all the time, and so I know you guys are all upset when I'm gone, but I know that it needs to be with everybody, not just me, okay? And so I feel like, you know, we're a church, and we need to not forsake assembly. And assembly is much more than just Sunday. It needs to be every day. Now, I'm not saying we need to come to church every day, but it needs to be a time, you know, that, you know, to nurture a friendship, they say you need to spend at least 1 hour a week to nurture that friendship. Now, although we're here in church right now, I don't necessarily see how you could possibly have an hour of nurturing with everybody here during that time. We're only here for a few hours. And so I challenge everybody here that we need to do more than just Sunday, more than just an hour every other Friday with the men, and more than just every 3 weeks for fellowship. Because we have some tough times ahead. I mean, clearly, if you've been watching the news in our nation, things are getting worse. And we won't want to be able to. We don't want to face these challenges by ourselves. We need to face these challenges together, because it's only when we are together, when we assemble together, that we can have the power through God to face them. Now, this is really corny, and I didn't want to do it, but I want to anyways. The Avengers are a bunch of heroes. Individually, they can only accomplish so much, but it's when they're together, when they're assembled in their assembly, that they're able to accomplish and fight the bad guys. Well, that's kind of the same with our church. You know, we need to assemble together more. We need to be all together and not just disperse for 165 hours a week. We need to do more than just a couple hours a week. We need to be more together. And so instead of beating this dead horse over and over again like I keep doing these past 5 minutes, I'll kind of end it with that and just say, you know, I love everybody here, and even though Brian in the back spells his name with an I still love him, you know, as a brother in Christ. And I don't hold that too much, you know. I've been trying to work through that. And I mean, I got this staff if I need, but I'm working through that, so... So today, you know, we have fellowship, and that's a great time, but I'd like to see if maybe we could use that time to maybe plan more.